So we're going to talk about Pajapati today and also some of the women from that time. She was Buddha's foster mother. But before that, women in the Buddhist time were defined by family connections. If she had a husband, she had status. If she had a son, she had status. If she didn't have those things, not much status. Because there weren't many jobs for women, a woman's life was completely defined by men. Mm-hmm. One writer said that women in India 2,500 years ago didn't have it so bad comparatively. It was the custom before purdah, the practice of secluding women from public view and covering up their faces and their bodies, and the practice of sacrificing women on their husband's funeral pyre. And there weren't so many child marriages. So I guess they moved on a little bit anyway. Pajapati was the stepmother to Siddhartha. Her name means leader of a great assembly, predicted by a seer at her birth. She was often called Mahapajapati, Maha meaning great, so that's what I'm going to call her. She was the historical figure that made it possible for women to enter monastic life and was a great example of motivation, inspiration, and determination. Her work in establishing women's monastic communities was revolutionary because it gave women access to meditation and learning, but also because it laid the foundation for a spiritual seeking in the Buddhist tradition, guiding them towards spiritual transformation. Women all over the world, then and now, can draw from her perseverance, determination, and overcoming gender barriers, pointing out the importance of gender balance and equality. I love that here at Blue Heron we have those same virtues, and that all our teachers and our members really have worked hard to make this a welcoming place for everybody. Mahapajapati and her sister Maya both married King Sudana of a neighboring clan, the Sakyas. It was not unusual for powerful men to have more than one wife or even a harem. Maya gave birth first to a son. A famous seer declared that if he remained at home, he would become a secular ruler. If he left home, he would be a religious leader. His name, Siddhartha, means he who accomplishes his aims. Maya died soon after his birth, and it was Mahapajapati that raised him as her own. She later had two more children, a son named Nanda and a daughter named Siddhari Nanda. Siddhartha left home when he was 29. He wandered and studied many different forms until he sat under the Bodhi tree and attained enlightenment. Mahapajapati was in her late 50s or early 60s when Siddhartha returned 6 years later. Not everyone welcomed him, but Mahapajapati and her husband Sudana did. They studied his teaching and converted to his path. Soon after, many men began to follow him, and many became monks. When wives and mothers lost their status, prostitutes lost their income because many of them became celibate. It turned the lives of women upside down, and of course, women weren't allowed to become homeless and make the same journey. As well as many men leaving to become monks, there was a battle happening between two clans over water rights. Kind of like now. Maya and Pajapati were from that neighboring clan. So Buddha was able to convince the two sides to stop fighting. But lives were lost, and many of the soldiers then became monks. Buddha himself was not a social reformer. He wasn't trying to recreate the social structure. He was trying to help people change their own world, men. As the wife of a chief and elder in the clan, Mahapajapati was highly respected, and her prestige increased because of her access to Buddhist teaching. Women turned to her for comfort and support to resolve the questions of suffering, life, and death, especially after her husband's death. They turned to her to find a new family with other women who had lost their social identity. They trusted her because she was experiencing the same thing. They trusted her because of her wisdom. She was surrounded by wives, widows, consorts, dancers, musicians. These women came to Mahapajapati for advice, guidance, and also the teaching. She soon had 500 followers. In that time, they seemed to use that number to mean many. As a matter of fact, the legend has it that before Siddhartha left home, he had a harem of 40,000. Mahapaji's son Nanda and Siddhartha's son Rahula went to follow the Buddha. Eventually, Mahapajapati, believing that women should have the same opportunity as men, went to the Buddha and said to him, quote, "It would be great, Lord, if women were allowed to renounce their homes and enter into the homeless state of the Dharma and the discipline of the Tathagata. We want to renounce and follow the path as well. Will you allow it?" I remember Bob talked about this when he talked about Ananda. His reply was, "Don't set your heart on women being able to do this." Remember, his intention was not to be a social reformer, and the culture was still very patriarchal. She asked two more times, and the Buddha refused each time. Women took things into their own hands. They shaved their heads, put on saffron robes like the monks, and walked barefoot a long way to where the Buddha was. What a sight. 500 women doing something women had never done in terms of becoming a renunciate. By the time they arrived, their feet were swollen and probably bloody and covered in dust. They met Ananda and told him that the Blessed would not permit them to renounce their homes and enter into a homeless state under the Dharma and the discipline proclaimed by the Tathagata. We're very unhappy. Ananda went to the Buddha also three times and made the claim for women, but was given the same answer as the women. Ananda then asked if it was because women don't have the capacity to become enlightened. Buddha said, "Women are fully capable of becoming enlightened. If they enter into this study, they could become just as fully attained." Ananda, not giving up, replied, "If women are able to realize perfection, and since Mahapajapati was so good to you as your aunt, nurse, foster mother when your mother had died, it would be good if you allowed women to enter into homelessness. Look at their determination and sincerity." Finally, Buddha relented and allowed the women to ordain as nuns as long as they agreed to accept 8 special rules. I did read that some research suggested that the rules might not have been given by the Buddha but added later. Anyway, the first rule said that a nun must bow down to a monk no matter if she had practiced many days or even years, but the monk no matter if he had only practiced one day before. This prevented nuns from teaching monks because they could not correct them. Monks, on the other hand, could teach nuns. Monks could reprimand nuns, but not vice versa. They also had to take more precepts. You can see how this created a power dynamic. The rest of the rules were similar in that they were meant to keep the nuns in a lower rank. She later tried to get Buddha to accept a more equitable set of rules that put seniority over gender in place. But again, as the story goes, he said, "Not possible." And all this is based on what we have learned from coming down over the years. So I'm thinking, what if the conversation wouldn't have happened if the rules weren't created in Buddha's time? And then what in fact happened to make it necessary for these rules to be created? But I think we'll never know. On ordination, she was giving a meditation, a subject of meditation, and through it was able to reach perfection. Mahapajapati's teachings were not original, but her life itself embodied the core Buddhist principles like persistence in spiritual seeking, embodying the Dharma teaching by dedicated practice, achieving enlightenment as a female pioneer, proving women's capacities for spiritual realization, emphasizing impermanence and compassionate action to overcome suffering. In other words, she taught through action. She's remembered for her fortitude in establishing the first nun's order. She wrote, "I have reached the state where everything stops, the extinction of senses, feelings, consciousness. This achievement is synonymous with nirvana, the highest attainment." And the story also goes that she died at 120 years old. Miracles occurred both then and at her cremation, which were later said to have been equaled by those at the Buddha's death. Clearly, the Sangha judged her to be quite remarkable. All of the first Buddhist nuns were disciples of Pajapati, and I wrote this in pencil. and she was the first ordained nun. These first disciples were part of the 500, including some of Siddhartha's harem. Many of them wrote poems. So this is Mahapajapati's poem. Homage to you, Buddha, best of all creatures who set me and others free from pain. All pain is understood. The cause, the craving is dried up. The Noble Eightfold Way unfolds. I have reached the state where everything stops. I have been a mother, son, father, brother, grandmother. Knowing nothing of the truth, I journeyed on. But I have seen the Blessed One. This is my last body, and I will not go from birth to death again. Look at all the disciples together, their energy, their sincere effort. This is homage to the Buddhas. Maya gave birth to Gotama for the sake of all. She has driven back the pain of the sick and dying. So she mentioned in there that she wouldn't go from birth to death again. I did read about her three previous lives and she said she was not going to come back again. Mita was one of the 500 nuns. To be reborn among the gods, I fasted and fasted every 2 weeks, day 8, 14, 15, and a special day. Now with a shaved head and Buddhist robes, I eat one meal a day. I don't long to be a god. There is no fear in my heart. And this one is from Tissa, who was one of the harem. Tissa, practice the practice. Don't let attachments overwhelm you. Free from ties, live in a world without obsessions. I have a book, actually, that Dylan gave me, but of some of these first nuns' poems, and they are very enlightening as to what it was like for women back then. It was definitely not easy. So there were many women that became influential nuns with many followers. Patakara was one of them. She had the largest following of women outside of Mahapajapati. She was born into a very wealthy family, but suffered many tragedies. Both her children died, drowned in a river, flooding in a river. At the same time, her husband died by a poisonous snake bite. And then as she traveled on to her parents' home, discovered that their house had collapsed in the flood and they were dead. So she went kind of mad after that and was found wandering around in circles. Her clothing became ragged and finally fell off. One day, still quite mad, she wandered into the grove where the Buddha was teaching. While everyone tried to keep her away, he came to her and said, "Sister, recover your presence of mind." And she did. He spoke to her at length and of the Buddhist path. When he finished, she asked to be ordained. Together they went to the community of nuns and she was accepted there. Her poem tells the story of the moment of her enlightenment. When they plow their fields, sow seeds in the earth, when they care for their wives and children, young Brahmas find riches. But I've done everything right. I've followed the rules of my teacher. I'm not lazy or proud. Why haven't I found peace? Bathing my feet, I watched the bath water spill down the slope. I concentrated my mind the way you train a good horse. Then I took a lamp and went to my cell, checked the bed and sat down on it. I took a needle, pushed the wick down, and when the lamp went out, my mind was freed. While the transmission of teaching was pretty much in the hands of the monks, the rule did allow nuns to teach other nuns. Some of these nuns, besides Mahapajapati and Patakara, were Dhammadina, renowned as the greatest woman preacher, Sukha, her disciple and heir, Kima, and Upalavana. Buddha considered Dhammadina to be the foremost among the nuns in the gift of preaching. This skill was held in great esteem, and she followed the example of the Buddha by preaching and not remaining aloof. Kima was one of the two women responsible for running the first community of nuns. She was considered to possess the greatest insight, and in several places in the Pali Canon, which are collections of Buddhist scriptures, she's called the most exemplary nun. She came from a ruling family in Sagala. Very beautiful, she became the chief consort to King Bhimsara. Because of her high status and beauty, she was very conceited. Buddha often paid visits to the royal court, but because he spoke ill of beauty and pleasure, she had no interest. She did eventually go to see him in his hermitage and was quite impressed with its beauty. As she stood before the Buddha, he made an image of a beautiful woman appear and then showed her passing from youth to middle age and finally to old age with broken teeth, gray hair, and wrinkled skin. The vision deeply impressed her on the truth of impermanence. Buddha knew her thoughts and told her, "People devoted to physical beauty are bound to the world, while those who renounced the world were free." When he finished speaking, she was enlightened. Hers is a rare instance of enlightenment attained by a laywoman. And another thing that was told about her was when a very religious king came to her with the question, "Did a Buddha exist after death?" She probably made reference to the Buddha, leaving that unanswered because he believed it had no bearing on the highest truth. The king related his encounter to the Buddha, saying that a king should sit at the feet of a woman in a society where nuns are not allowed to teach monks. Wow. This shows the high esteem which was held by Kima. So her poem starts by Mara talking. "Come on, Kima, both of us are young and you are beautiful. Let's enjoy each other." Kima: "I'm disgusted by this body. It's foul and diseased. It torments me. Your desire for sex means nothing to me. Pleasures of the senses are swords and stakes. The elements of mind and body are chopping block for them. What you call delight is not delight for me. Everywhere the love of pleasure is destroyed. The dark, the great dark is torn apart. And death, you too are destroyed. Fools who don't know things as they really are revere mansions of the moon and tend fire in the wood, thinking this is purity. But for myself, I honor the enlightened one. Best of all, in practicing his teaching, am completely freed from suffering." So while she was considered the woman of greatest insight, Upalavana was the woman most gifted in magical powers. Together, they shared the leadership of the nun Sangha. A mature woman, Upalavana was permitted to ordain women. Originally, this was solely under the Buddha's, was allowed to. Later, senior monks and eventually senior nuns were gained this status as well. So that's it. All right. Thank you.